before the hurricane, and I won't be available next Monday night, but they're probably having the event anyway next Monday night. The only reason they, in the event, they not even got through, but it was deemed too cold to do it. Next week's supposed to be much warmer. So it's more geschmack when it's warm. So I'm going to be out of town, but I'm coming back Monday night, but I'm too late for the bat. So hopefully in 2 weeks. Okay, so what's the topic?
Why did Rabbi sit?
Huh?
In Rosh Hashanah? You know, this is a while ago. Rabbi sat a different spot.
Yeah?
Compared to that.
I sat over there?
I mean, Rabbi sat instead of where he usually sits.
Where?
He turned the shtender.
You didn't say exactly where the shtender is.
When?
On Rosh Hashanah.
Right.
Rabbi sat in a different place.
Right.
Why?
Oh. Right, it's not so complicated. Because I sit next to my son. He wasn't gonna sit on the Mizrachvant. So either he was gonna sit next to me by sitting on the Mizrachvant, or I was gonna sit next to him, not on the Mizrachvant. So of the two choices, that seemed like a better choice. Regular davening is short, 1, 2, 3, but you know, Yom Narayim is like, it could be, you know, not in the regular time, but when he was a little boy, so I was gonna, who was gonna sit with? I was gonna, you know, sit by himself. So I mean, he has people to sit with, but at this point, that's like where I sit in Rosh Hashanah. So we just continue that. But not so complicated. Just like, it's not any anivus or. I came to the Young Israel here. And there was a very hush of a Rav, visiting Rav, who was sitting in the back corner of the Young Israel. I walked in, I see him sitting there. So I assumed like people didn't realize, whatever. I walked to the front, it was starting davening. It was like a mincha marav or something like that, or Shabbos mincha, or weekday mincha. I went over to the Rav Lehrfeld and I said, Rav Lehrfeld, should I bring him closer to the front? So he says to me, no. Let him wallow in his yumoti. You know, some people don't like sit in the front. At the beginning, like, you know, I was always against sitting on top. That we used to sit up on the stage. That was torture.
Why? I mean, for you or for us?
Yeah, it's like, you know, when Achashverosh, I assume, sat on the stage. You know,
Welcher sits on the stage.
Okay, Rabbi Welcher. So if you be ever, if you be Rabbi Welcher, okay, Rabbi Welcher deserves to sit on the stage. Rabbi Welcher. We had crazy tables in the basement. We had these weird looking tables. We got them from some computer company, and they had these like U-shaped tables like this. You've seen that computer tables, and we got them for free, and they were probably worth about $30,000 or $40,000 just in the furniture. They were like solid oak, light oak, light wood tables, and you know, like tables aren't the most expensive, but you know, the yeshiva got very, when we bought these tables, we didn't just go and buy from Home Depot or Office Depot the tables, you know, like you get in your sukkah. We got very hush of tables that we eventually did buy were very expensive tables. I think each table was like, I don't know, $200-$300, the tables that we have. They're not just your stam average everyday tables. They're not meant to take apart and put back together, although you could fold them up, but they're a little bit more hush, much more hush than that. So you figure out that there's, let's see, 6 rows, 7 times 3 is 21, and 24, about 50 tables in the base manish. Figure out how much it costs times 300. What is that, 50 times 300? $15,000? Okay. Those tables were probably double. Yeah, because they were like really custom. So there was no room to put everything. There were no aisles, no space. So there was no Mizrachvant, which we sat on the stage. And they're just like where we sat. And then last year, I think during the summer, we all got together and we were trying to come up with ways that we could be closer connection with the guys, with the between the BAME and the guys. And we wanted to come. We said we're gonna sit in a room. We're not leaving here until we come up with 10 ways that we can forge a closer kasher with the guys. So people like not people, Ray Sharfman, Ray Kier, Ray Neumann, Ray Lubman, myself, we were all like pressing. We weren't gonna leave the room until we came up with, I think it was 10, but come up with strategies. And then somebody mentioned this idea, like, oh, I know we can move down. So, okay, like the sooner we got to the fixed number, the sooner we can close the meeting and go home. And that was one of the things, so we switched.
Why does that make a closer kasher with Tabi
Yamim? You know that shmooze, I said the shmooze on Yoshayo, with the Me'ala'am, Mitocha'am. There's part of that, you know, like, he gave Musa to Klai Yisrael, but a little bit, it was detached. A little bit Klai Yisrael felt that he was condescending. And according to Rabbi Sebrow, according to Rabbi Kamen, according to Rabbi Lubin told me that Rabbi Sebrow told Rabbi Lubin that there's one Shmuz Chedush Elev, that it's a Chil Hashem. It's not true. The Rosh Yeshiva never said such a thing. He didn't say, is this Shmuz that was written up? That Rosh Yeshiva didn't mean that it was a slightly kind, even that, not it was not even a daki dakis, it wasn't even a trace. It was the appearance of maybe a trace, but it wasn't a real trace. It was only appearance of a trace, which of course makes my shmuz chiddush even greater, because you're responsible even for creating the appearance of such a trace of an impropriety. But I think that's part of, you know, Dov is asking that question. That's a little part of like me, Allah, like here. You know, if the guys, you know, you feel like, you know, you're sitting around the table, you know, we're together. For a halacha is like that also. Like Rebbe's not allowed to, there's one Gemara, I remember, I don't know if it was Megillah or Roshana. I think it was Roshana. I was teaching a couple of summers ago. That is even halachas of the Rebbe giving shir. The Rebbe shouldn't be standing and the Talmidim are sitting, or vice versa, or between them are... The Rebbe is supposed to be
sitting and
standing. There's one way, but the reason is because of the, you know, it's
the
inside or the Talmidim. Yeah.
Preface to the question is that back in high school, I had a friend in a lot more modern school than me. And we would often debate different topics and pick up on halacha. And debating it wasn't even being close. And even though I knew I'm on the right side, but based on the proofs and the things, I simply didn't have any sort of bakiyas or any grasp on anything in order to make my points and prove my points effectively. It's only when I actually saw Amar Makomas that my friend would send me.
When was this?
Yeah, 11th grade. It was only when I would actually see Amar Makom as a friend would send me, would I be able to say, oh, you're learning
this in high school?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm just more so now. But it would only when I would actually see Amar Makom so would I actually be able to say anything. So, which was kind of an embarrassment, because my friend got out of school at 5:30, and I had nightsitter three nights a week at that point.
Right.
And it wasn't in the same realm of debate. So my question is that are high schools focusing, it's specifically more in the yeshiva realm, focusing on learning too much Gemara and not giving other basic ideos, klalios, a realm of breadth in halacha, a breadth in bikias, in hashkafa, an actual mar makomos and hashkafa instead of concepts. And for effect, I'll throw in chumash and nach.
Do high schools learn enough Chumash and Nach is one question. Do high schools learn enough Hashkafa is another question. And is high schools learn enough Halacha is fourth, third question.
But it's more of an asking subjective question. Are high schools learning too much on Gemara and neglecting other stuff?
And once you're asking that question, you could also ask the question, are high schools learning enough Gemara? Like, once you're asking the question, you may as well throw in Gemara also, maybe learning not enough Gemara.
I would say not that, because Gemara doesn't, well, Gemara develops specifically in our type of schools, in the Chafetz Chaim realm, where it's not yeshivish enough where high schoolers are going to be sitting and learning all day, and it's not modern enough that it's just
We still have some high schoolers that are learning all day.
But we have this year, but not in previous years and in other schools in the similar realm.
One.
It could be that even limiting the amount of Gemara learning now makes an increased desire for them to learn Gemara in Beis Medrash based on scarcity principle. Once they come to Beis Medrash, they're not already overloaded by a massive amount of Gemara. And it could be time can be effective giving a basic foundation before we move on.
That's a different question. I'm not sure how to answer the question, because it could be I'm not qualified to answer that question, because you're asking my defense of the Masorah of how we learn. I didn't make the Masorah, I only carried it out. I didn't create the Masorah, and what we learn was basically handed down. This is the Seder Hayom. You know, they did in Slabodka, you know.
I mean high school.
I'm talking about high school. You know, they learned, Rabbi Chanan Baranovich had a high school. Baranovich was like a high school. So, you know, we didn't change from the way they used to learn. I mean, Rabbi Yaakov was a teenager. Do you know that someone asked me today, or yesterday, that they went to a... Someone they know went to a, someone from here went to a bechina out of town, an eighth grader. I don't know if it was this year or last year. And he was unprepared. He was not on the level because, you know, over there they're learning, you know, learning Tosfos and Mefarshim. And over here they don't even do every Tosfos in eighth grade. So the person asked me, you know, like, it's Chabal that Miami, like, they're not on the level. That's what he was saying. So I said that when our yeshiva was created and started, so what the curriculum should be was discussed with the Gedolei Hador. The yeshiva started in 1984. Rabbi Moshe was living. Rabbi Yaakov was living. Rabbi Yaakov spent many months in Miami. Rabbi Yaakov Netsky Zatzal. And Rabbi Chait spoke to Rabbi Yaakov. I don't know if Rabbi Grunbaum was there, but maybe you could ask him this if you have a vibe with him to know. I spoke to Rabbi Grunbaum tonight, reminded him, asked him a story that I heard that the Rashiva said, and he said, yeah, he was there. So he told me, you know, I told him that someone said they're coming to the Zachasana in Miami this week, and I heard from someone that they told someone that they're coming to the Makom HaTumah. So where was the Makom HaTumah? Miami. They're coming to Miami. So and they don't live in New York. They live in an out of town place. And I said that out of town place, I know that a gadol who said that place is. Well, I don't know what it is today, but it was an Irani Dachas. Called it an Irani Dachas.
Vegas?
Out of Vardo, Irani Dachas. So I asked Rabbi Grunbaum what, you know, like, how you call it Makom HaTumah? They said, well, because no beaches, not the other towns, not, it's more of a cold city, you know, weather-wise, so it's more of a, you know, it's not a beach. So I asked him the question. Well, I'll get back to the story I was saying. I was going to be slightly distracted. And I said, wasn't there a maisa with the yeshiva? When the yeshiva opened up, they opened up on 41st Street in Miami Beach. And there's no one here from Miami Beach, but you've been on 41st Street, so you know. And there used to be a X-rated movie theater. And the yeshiva was able to rent a building that was mamash right across the street. And the, I said, I recall, because I was branching that year in Miami. So I was here when Ray Kringlat moved here. The year he came, I came with him. Ray Mendel moved here that year also. And I, myself, and Rabbi Sharfman, Zatzal, and four others of my chaverim, who were all, you know, Gedolim Mechanchim, all of us were here. And we ate over many, we spent many Shabbos in Bar. That's why I'm so close to Rabbi Grumblat. Because, you know, we lived in his house for the year. We were there all the time. We spent so many hours a day with each other. We told over our chabur, the first Torah chaburis we ever said, we had them cleared by him. Our muschaburis, like we marched along with him a whole year. So, and, you know, we ran every Shabbaton for the yeshiva. He told us once, like, we're having a Shabbaton. And we all looked at each other, last thing you want to do, like, after a long week is, like, run a Shabbaton for a bunch of high school kids. You know, I know I shouldn't be saying that, but the, you know, that's the last thing. And strike that for the record. And we didn't want to do it. So Ragumat just said, guys, you have to do it. I can't do it. You know I can't. Yeah, it's not like I don't want to. It's not the work. I can't do it. It's not my skill set. Can't run a Shabbaton. I remember driving. We went to these crazy county fairs, and we went around picking kids up from all over the place. We're trying to recruit also. We took all these kids on these on a trip and. No, we worked very hard. But anyway, so the Rosh Yeshiva say that the best place, they asked if the Rosh Yeshiva, if they could have open up a yeshiva across the street from an X-rated theater. And I said, when I remember hearing it, the Rosh Yeshiva said it's the best place to open up a yeshiva. So I thought it was because where the tumah is, that's where you should open up a yeshiva. So I was contrasting it with the story that someone said they're coming to the Mokam HaTumah. So he said, well, I'm the one that asked Rosh Yeshiva the question. So, yes, I was there. He didn't say exactly that. What he said was that if you have to open a yeshiva in a city where there's an X-rated theater, the best place to have the yeshiva is across the street because the kids will be scared to go because you're going to catch them. So that's what you want to be known as exactly what he said. But, so... you didn't hear that. So, with this question about the when the Rebbe asked me about the giving shir in eighth grade, you know, without Tosas, not in Farshim and Chaval, so we asked Rabbi Yaakov. I wasn't there. Rabbi Chait asked Rabbi Yaakov. I heard it from Rabbi Chait. It should be confirmed with Rabbi Chait, who will be in town also. And what Rabbi Chait told me was that Rabbi Yaakov said he doesn't know if they should teach Tosas in 8th grade. When he was in 8th grade, he did not learn Tosas. Rabbi Yaakov said, when he was in 8th grade, he did not learn Tosas. So, and there's this thinking that if you learn it sooner, you're better off. You know, it's the same debate, like, is a child who's, they teach reading, you know, in Miami, they were taught reading the end of kindergarten, first grade. But, and the kids are 5 turning 6. Maybe it's better to try to teach a kid when they're 4. New York, you know, let's teach them when they're 4. But Mehechi Tesi, teaching a kid how to read earlier is better for them. You know, we don't know. There are those that would challenge it and say maybe it's not better to push kids too early. You know, but there are places that have no secular studies and have the kids learning until 10 o'clock at night from the time that they're going into ninth grade. They learn them. Okay, that's not our system. We don't push that system because that system is the system in Eretz Yisrael and the Haredi places. And, you know, it has a lot of problems. You know, many people are Matzliach, but many aren't. So,
if we'd be able to learn Hebrew all day in high school, would we?
Hebrew?
I mean,
when you say Hebrew, you mean Kodesh?
I mean, if we could learn, because I heard, like, I mean, the Golem all kind of, I mean, sound like they're
Rabbi Danziger told me that in Philly, He went to Philly. A very harsh little place. Only in 12th grade, not before 12th grade, were you able to get out of any English. And even in 12th grade, to get out of English class, you had to take a fair, an interview with Revelia. Is that Sal? And Revelia, you know, if he didn't think you were cut out, that you were going to take it very 100% seriously, he said no. He said no a lot of the time. And he would say, you, yeah, you know, like you couldn't argue Revelia. And if you did it, if you joined the base manager, they wouldn't give you a diploma. You're on your own. There's no messing with Philly. They're much more lenient. I know a lot of 12th graders who are getting diplomas.
So that's a no.
No what?
We would not learn the music on their field day.
As a general rule, we wouldn't, only because since it's not the Masorah in America, so we follow what's been done. I'm not that Masorah came from Moshe Rabbeinu, but high schools, Ari Lubin always likes to say there's no Masorah for high schools, but.
My argument is less that and more. First of all, I did ask Rabbi Lubin the other day. I asked him just stop a question. Volozhin closed because they had to learn English. Why are we teaching English? And he said you have to know that the Masorah changes. He was saying that following the Masorah is part of following the Masorah is knowing when the Masorah changes, you have to change also. And he brought a pretty basic example. I forgot what it was. But
Volozhin was high school?
Volozhin was. Could have been based in Madrid.
Could have been
based in Madrid. But
so I have a question on your question.
Maybe you can ask a question on Rabbi Lubin because it's not what he answered.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Say your question then.
My question was, is that Volozhin closed because they didn't teach, because they didn't want to teach secular studies.
Therefore.
And
you write, it's a right that. Well,
why in high schools now do we teach secular studies? I didn't know I didn't caught that Volozhin was in high school at the time. But Rabbi Lubin didn't answer that. He gave up Hashkafa Shmuel on how Masorah comes down over time. It's different. So I like to say that now, the argument of what I'm saying is that there's a need that needs to be addressed now, that especially with the advancements in recent, the last 8 years of technology and information everywhere, anytime, it's not like it used to be where what was in the house was the information people got. And it wasn't like someone could go anywhere and they're constantly bombarded with information on all sides. And people were brought up with much stronger hashkafic and just the keyest backgrounds. But nowadays, a lot of people coming to high schools simply don't know the basics.
Like what? Let me give them. I'm not arguing with you, I just want to know what you're referring to.
Basics in terms of, you could say Hilchos Brachos. How many high schoolers?
In the kitchen, there's napkins on the table.
How many high schoolers, if quizzed, would really know Hilchos Brachos?
More high schoolers.
No, that's because I'm saying if there wasn't an internet, right, and they didn't have all that information in the house, their focus would be elsewhere. Their focus would be on other things, and they would, honestly, you could say Niskanen, you could say, but people nowadays, high school nowadays, there's a lot of general lacking things, and if that was addressed first, and then you build foundation, you can't build a house without a foundation, you can't build the 12th floor without building the 11th floor first, so that's really a numbers thing, but with building in a foundation before we load on the Gemara where the really intense stuff comes.
Could you bring us some apples? Maybe other guys want.
Maybe that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Maybe that should be done.
The way I understand it, I don't want to speak out of turn, but the way I understand it is that it's not like if you, let's say, oh, you know, we think the guys nowadays need more halacha. So the Rebbe's in the comments, we're learning halacha today from, the new schedule is, instead of learning Gemara from 9:30 to 2, 9:30 to 12:30, and then one from Bekiyas from 1 to 2, we're going to change it, and we're going to learn halacha from 9 to 12, and Gemara from 12:30, and then 1 to 2, we're learning Gemara.
I'll better illustrate that.
I want to say a point. I think the feeling is that it's hard enough to get younger Talmidim into learning, and the feeling is that that's why we don't even concentrate enough on the reading of Gemara, and it seems to me that as much as everyone's kvetching that people don't want to read anymore, but at the same time that you have to take a step back and understand why I think there's a reason for that, is because there's people are getting people to get the streets are very dangerous. So it's almost like desperation to get guys into learning. The best reason, the best way to get someone into learning is to challenge them, to get their minds into it. And that comes from the challenging them in Svara. So we're developing the Koach HaSvara and the maybe the Cheshbon, but the reading itself is drier. Halach is a little drier. Of course, if you're interested in particular halacha, I was in one class today in Boca. I was helping them out there. So I think I saw a Feder there. Is there a Feder in like 6, 7, or 8?
Like 8.
Yeah, I think I was in that class. So it looked like a Feder.
Uh-huh.
No, I wasn't evaluating kids or anything. I was just having been there. So they were learning like Prusbel. Like.
What is shooting for the moon?
No, they're learning about
the Prusbel. What's Prusbel?
A Prusbel by Shemitah. So, you know, so I'm just saying, it's like, you know, it was pretty fascinating for them because, but I don't know if you like if you could catch the interest and motivate them, inspire them to learning. I think you're probably right that there is more of a need to counter the thousands of interest points from the secular world that are attacking them. They need to have multiple entry Kodesh points or Ashkafa point, halachic points. But I just don't know if that's going to, it would be healthy if they had that, but we believe Barasi Yetzahara, Barasi Torah Tavlin. What is going to be the hook to get someone to want to continue in learning? Are we ever going to be able to really compete with, the Hollywood, I don't mean this Hollywood, movie industry and TV and internet and music and social media? Are we ever really going to be able to compete with that? It seems like overwhelming. You can't even start. It's a multi-trillion, trillion, infinite million dollar business that they're throwing into, grabbing the youth, and it's everywhere you walk. And here what's going to be the counter? What's the counter for us? It doesn't seem like the modern. I know this is on tape, but there are some modern schools, the modern Orthodox schools, are not more successful. I get the study every 10 years. Avichai does a demographic study of Jewish institutions, and I think I have one in my office. You would like it. If I can find it, I'll bring it to you.
Please.
They do this study on demographics, and they show in the last 10 years the growth or lack of growth or decrease in all the various institutions. That's talking about anything Jewish, from Reform to Haredi. In every country, they do mamish a world study on Jewry, and it shows that the only ones that are advancing, the modern Orthodox schools population went down, and Haredi schools have gone up, Lubavitch has gone up, Hasidim has gone up, but the Haredi schools are the only ones that are going up, and they recognize this. The seculars recognize this, and anyone who's educated also recognizes this. That's why it's becoming increasingly popular for a lot of the yeshivas are now hiring, for lack of a better word, fundraisers to go after the secular Jews, to try and make connections with secular Jews, and they're giving big money to yeshivas now, because secular people who are in their 60s and 70s who want to make an impact on the Jewish world, and they want to leave a legacy gift, so they show them, they go to these studies, They say, okay, listen, look where you have a choice to give your money. Okay, you give the money here. The Reform and Conservative, oh my gosh, going down, down, down. I went to a convention, not this past school year, but 2 years ago. I went to a convention by PEJ, which was Professional Excellence in Jewish Education. What is it, like an Avichai? He's like very, very, you know, elite organizations run by doctors and mega bucks in there. And every Jewish organization was involved in this, and it was we got a grant. The grant was valued about $100,000, but in coaching, not in money. So we got $100,000 worth of coaching for recruitment and retention. In case you think it's bogus, what are they going to teach you already? They made us write a report to work on the grant. One person in our organization said, nah, you'll never do it. Don't even bother. They'll throw you out. But we said, no, we're going to do it. So we outvoted that person. We did it. I had to participate because I also thought we should do it. So I had to participate. And we had to pick a target grade that we're going to invest all of our kochos to market it and use the best practices for recruiting and retention, basically recruiting. And in the 5 years since we did that, our preschool, because of these techniques, grew from 106 to this year at, I think, 232. These practices really work. It's just best practices. No great tradition. Just we followed the system, and we did it in high school. So we got to move up slowly, but I went to this convention. Is what I wanted to tell you, and I was so amazed that there were so many people there from Reform and Conservative. And other things I don't remember. What other denominations are there? Yeah, those type. I don't know what they are. There are. But I sat next to people because they split us into groups. And I got a chance to talk to them. And one of the presenters said that the whole Jewish world is mixed up now. Now, in these out-of-town places, you can have a guy who's a staunch Reform or Conservative officer, that he strictly goes to, you know, temple, Beth Shalom, whatever, but Mincha Marv during the week, he davens by Chabad. And some of these people were so idealistic, like there was no animosity whatsoever to it. There was none. And maybe in Israel there is, but in America, from the Jewish educators who were there, these people were mamish, I don't know how to describe it, but like, they were so moser nefesh, it seems, that what they were describing, and they were so enthralled with us, that's what it seemed to me. And they were so dedicated, but their institutions are going down, down, down. There'd be no one left. And the only ones that are moving up are the Haredi, ultra-Orthodox, Lubavitch, and Hasidic world. I don't know why the Babis has a separate category, but they do.
What is everything using that for?
I think the reason is because what's attracting people in the Jewish kids is not even the modern. Had modern Orthodox also is also lost a tremendous amount in the last 10 years. So I think it's the Torah learning. If we change, you know, like the Masorah is not the change. Changes through the Torah, through Liban Torah. And the halacha, you know, I mean, it is good for them to know halacha. I mean, I heard the same thing from our own Rebbeim, who are stepping up their game in terms of how much halacha in 9th and 10th grade, what they're doing with them. They're doing things more that are day-to-day, chelik aleph, chelik beis stuff.
Why is it that when you challenge someone, it makes them want to do it more? Are we saying that was part of the reason why
what was the expression? There was some commercial. The mind is a t- terrible thing to waste. I think the reason why, and this is not my word, I just don't remember who it's from. Why do we spend, this is usually a Shabbaton question in high school to Rabbi Lubin. Maybe I heard it from Rabbi Lubin. Like, why do we spend so much time learning Gemara? Why do we do that? Now, I thought, of all the mitzvahs, why do we spend so much time learning? But I thought the reason is because every other mitzvah, I was thinking about this, and I to understand it, you take a lulav and esrog, you know, okay, you hold it for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, Hashanah Rabbi, hold it for an hour, you know, when you put it down, the mitzvah's over. Tefillin, you put on, and you take it off. Okay, tzitzis you're putting on, but you don't remember you're doing it after, you know, most of the time. And it's just there. You're getting a mitzvah, but you know, if it's lefum tzara agra, if it's based on how much you're putting into it, you're not putting a whole lot into the wearing of the tzitzis. Okay, you eat kosher, but you're not eating all day long. Unless you are eating all day long, then you're getting a mitzvah all day long because you're not eating trei. But most people aren't eating all day long. I'm trying to think what other, you know, you. Like, what are you doing? You're wearing yarmulkes, not a mitzvah, to say. It might be a mitzvah. So if a person's learning, so his whole mahus is engaged in Torah Hashem. So when the whole mind is consumed with it, thinking of it, so that's the whole you. So I'm not saying it can't be done with learning halacha. That I'm not saying that, but I think that's in my understanding of why there's so much in learning, and that of course it's going to, if a person is engaged, his mind is engaged in it. That's what he's going to draw to, his imagination. Learning is very very geschmack. You know, a person gets into the essence. The Chazal say that Torah is compared to, this is from my Grumlad, Shemen Zayas. I heard this from him. Shemen Zayas, like olive oil. Why is it compared to olive oil? He says because an olive off the tree is a very bitter fruit. It's very bitter. And but olive oil is the sweetest of all the oils. So when you press the olive, the sweetness comes out. Torah is compared to that because Torah off the branch, so to speak, is bitter. You open Gemara for the first time and you try and learn it, you try and learn Gemara and the, you know, Ba'asra, the Krakrava, you know, the words make no sense and you bite it and you're stumbling over the words and you don't know where the commas go and there's no nakudas, which for the life of me, I cannot figure out, you know, why, you know, like, Everything has nakudas in it. Well, why don't they just make gemaras with nakudas? I don't know, with commas and punctuation. Yeah, it's usher. You know, and if they bolded, I know somebody because they bolded a couple of words in the gemara. They returned it. So against Masorah, like why?
Not our yeshiva.
Huh?
Not our yeshiva.
No comment.
But
oh yeah. So, but the point is, like, it's bitter. The beginning of learning is very bitter. And many people, they throw in the towel, hopefully not many, but there are a lot who throw in the towel in the bitter stage, not realizing that if they get past it, they get to the essence of the learning, that's where the sweetness is. And if they stick with it, so that's the part that is not... I just don't understand this part. I was once hacking Rabbi Feuerman on this, like, math. Okay, I'm not a math guy. Okay, I love the algebra. I got it. I totally mastered it. Regular algebra, it's not so hard, but I remember I was put in the stupid class. I know not to call it that. I shouldn't say it like that. Okay, I was in the dummy class. Oh, yeah, I did it again. you see, when you're ninth grade, they put you in that class and still sticks with you. And I love telling over the story that I was in the lower class, okay. Okay, Rav Sharfman was in the higher class. He was brilliant. And the teacher came in. They had Mr. Kaufman, and we had Mr. Planter. Okay? So Planter had, and we weren't smart enough to take, based on the school's entrance exam, we weren't smart enough to take the higher algebra class, which they, those guys were going to take the state regions. We weren't going to take the state regions. They didn't think we were Roy. We were going to take the citywide exam. Now, New York City, I guess, has lower class citizen than the state. You know, the aggregate of the state was on a much higher level, so the state tests were considered much more advanced and too advanced for us. So the teacher came into the class, and after one day, he had to do an assessment. He gave that thing, and he came back. He says, you know, guys, I don't understand. I'm just looking at some of your work you gave back. They told me that you guys can only take the citywide exam because you're in the lower class. But from your work, you know something? I think you guys could do very well on the state regions. As a matter of fact, if you want to make a bet, I bet you you could even do better than those guys in the other class. I bet you, because I'm looking at your work, and I don't know who put you in this class, but if you want, I'm ready to put in some extra work, and you guys, you'll see, at the end of the year, you'll beat their scores. If you're game, let me know. So, of course, we all raised our hands. We were so stupid. Okay, I didn't cop that he was totally playing us. And so I was really motivated. So I got like 100, you know, 99 on the region. That was like the happiest day of my life. So my question is, I was so geschmack to figure out math. So is the, I once asked this, I'd love to know the answer to this question. Is the sweetness of math different than the sweetness of Torah? Is there a different sweetness? Is there a special, you know, when we say like learning is vaharevna, vaharevna, Hashem should make it sweet, but is only learning Torah sweet? Is math can't be sweet? There are other things that can be sweet when you learn it, when you figure it out. Physics, someone knows physics. I'm not a physics guy, but I assume if like, you know, Dr. Burke, I assume like he sees like this, you know, problem. He gets, what do you think Dr. Burke does in his spare time? Probably does these physics problems. As I say, such a brainy guy, you know. So I just wonder what it is. But I know, I think the pshat is really like learning. I don't know, I can't answer for math, but the learning is what engages a person, because it's his whole mind into it. And maybe halacha is a little drier, so it doesn't engage the mind as much. Of course, if you're learning halacha, if they were on the majority, you learn halacha with the beer halachas and going to the gemaras and you ask a stira and a kasha, then it could be that way also. You know, but otherwise, the learning, if you're just learning, you know, the halacha, you know, going through the, whatever, the kitzur or the, you know, chayadam, you just learn halacha after halacha, halacha, it could be a little dry. So I suspect that's the reason, because we can't afford the luxury of teaching them the halacha. They need to engage the mind.
So why don't they start teaching them Shalos and Shubos or Moshe Feinstein? I mean, something that is like that, and you will.
I don't know if they have the skill. Do they have the skill level to do it?
With the kids, or
yeah, the kids.
I mean, they're learning Gemara. What would be different?
Well, they're gonna go through. They're gonna go through a Gemara. It is a good skill to do, but they need to learn how to learn a piece of Gemara. How they going to do Reb Moshe, who's doing multiple Gemaras with them.
I mean, so that's why they have the Rebbe, because the Rebbe will be teaching them a stira and this Gemara and the halachic principle of this and why.
Why is that better? Because how many chubas do you think they'll do in a year? 100 chubas?
But they're interested
come
in learning.
Come out with the same skills, and now you also know,
I mean, if
where you're allowed to do Shabbos instead of how to make a
get. Yeah, they come out with
hey, two more than in Gittin.
I mean, they come out with more skills,
yeah,
because
yeah,
if it's dry halacha, no one's interested in it. But if they're learning Shalos Yeshuvos and the randomest questions that might be interesting, and Moshe and his Miki is getting from everywhere, they might be more interested than, you can't do this, you could do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. I mean, why is, I mean, some people might even enjoy that more and learn more from it. Also, you will get more than just
I'm not sure you're right. But Moshe's tshuva is, I don't know how wise that is. Moshe's tshuva were not written for the high school kid, you know.
But, I mean, I'm not basing on Moshe, it could be others.
No, that's true. Rabbi Grimblatt, we used to do that by Shabbaton. We used to pick a tshuva for a Moshe and do it with the whole high school, everyone would have the chavrusa, and then Rabbi Grimblatt would give a session on the tshuva. I don't know, I think it could be interesting to do it every day,
You don't have to do a tshuva a day.
The Masorah is... Did you ever read the Haskama? You know, the beginning of the Art Scroll, the Mars, you have all the Haskamas, all the Rashidas. Did you ever read the Rashidas?
Kind of
you ever read, go through it? So the Rosh Hashiva's Hashkama, which they'll never print in English, because people like might read it. But the Rosh Hashiva's Hashkama, he writes that at the end, you know, Lishma Bani, listen, my child, nobody should think that anyone's going to become much too big of a gadol by learning from Gemaras of these type of translation. You're not going to become anything great by learning with Art Scroll. I can't believe they printed it. You shouldn't think that you can become a great person of that, because
they were so confident no one would read it.
The Masorah of Klai Yisrael was always Rebbe giving to Talmud, who are Omid al Mishmar, were sitting, and they were Mosa Nefesh, through learning, giving over Rebbe to Talmud, through Nosev and Noslin, through back and forth with the Rebbe, not the notes on the bottom of the Art Scroll. So he wasn't trying to condemn the Art Scroll. I think the Rishi was wanted to just be a moda, should be known that, you know, it's helpful as a reference, and it's helpful as you're stuck by yourself or whatever. There is a place for it, but no one should think it's the replacement of a Rebbe. You have a Rebbe, you have a Gemara Rashi Tosas. That's always been the Masorah of how we give over, you know, the learning. So I guess if you have a group of, you know, public school kids who have no shaykhis, and you need to intrigue them, you can't inspire them through Hamafkid or Metzias. Elvis is fascinating. You know, you get them into it. It seems that for the most part, I mean, the schools I visited, including our own, most kids do like learning Gemara. Most kids. They start in fifth grade, they make a whole big deal about it, and all the parents come, they really get their Gemaras, all exciting. And sixth graders, you know, like, they're very pure, sixth graders. They don't, you know, the subjects that they're doing are not any more relevant. The kids doing math is not relevant in their lives. Science is not relevant in their lives. You know, learning world history or American history is not particularly relevant in their lives, but you need to be knowledgeable. So the kids are very, you know, as a human being, that's what they're used to. They're learning things that are not always particular, but most kids don't think about it. Okay, David Holtzman, yes, he needed to do more Igros Moshes. I don't doubt. I wouldn't want to be his Rebbe when he was 13 years old, 14 years old. It could be he was more challenging. There are some kids who are challenging, and you do have to offer those kids. Do you guys ever meet Chaim Hirsch? I learned with him in my house. He was my first Talmud when I taught eighth grade when I came in 1994. I still learn with him once a week. And he graduated in 99 from our high school. He did not learn in our base management. I think he went to Milwaukee for 6 months. Then he went to YU and became an accountant. But when he was in eighth grade, so I had 17, 18 boys. We didn't have the luxury of having an honor shiur and a regular shiur and a Rabbi Yachman's shiur. We didn't have that luxury. So what I used to do is at night, I used to prepare for the kids who I felt knew the Gemara. I used to prepare cards. I used to call it like level 3. And when a kid I felt knew the Gemara, and I'm going over it again, and I thought they're gonna be bored. I whipped out a card. I went over to this person's desk and I dropped the card, and that was, Will, if I drop this card on your desk, you can go with any person you want. You can pick one chavrusa in the class, and you and that person can go into the base Spanish, research that. When you finish, come back. I usually give them like 20 minutes to 30 minutes of work to do, based on the Tosfos. And I was learning with him a couple weeks ago, and I had my briefcase. I remember, like, there's one zipper in my briefcase I just never opened. But that was much the same. I have my briefcase like 20 years. I opened up the zipper, and there it was. It's still there. Level 3 card with Chaim Hirsch's name on it. That he was in my share in 1994, 95. That's like 22 years ago. And that's what, you know, you have a kid like David Holtzman, you have to be prepared. Maybe you really should send him on a, like you're saying, if there is a kid who really, he's not getting turned on from the Gemara, and he does need some, he would be intrigued by that. You send a kid to open up, you know, give him a Mar Mokum, a Rav Adi Yosef, and you see, you know, let him see a few pieces of something like really interesting. That, yeah, not every kid gets turned on from the same thing, and the kids who are not getting turned on from it, not every Rebbe is capable, first of all, of preparing on that level, so advanced material for so many different types of guys. It's true. That's a problem, because now we believe in, the only people we have in Chafetz Chaim who are Rebbeim, you know, most of them are not the only ones, but we hold that the best first grade Rebbe is someone who Mamish is the biggest Lamban. Rabbi Winder, Meir Bagley married, who did Meir Bagley marry? He married from Rabbi Winder. Rabbi Winder's first grade guru, Rebbe. He got smicha from the yeshiva. He was giving a base medrash shiur in Eretz Yisrael. He moved back to America and took a job as the first grade Rebbe in Tiferes Moshe. And this, subsequently, he went to Farakoi. And he revolutionized the way all Rebbeim, I think, across the country teach first grade, not just Chofetz Chaim. He mamish said chidushim, unbelievable, in Kriya. And he revolutionized the whole industry of how to teach first grade. He was such a big lamdan. So we hold that, you know, every grade, even if you teach in Chumash, it has to be with tremendous amkus. You can't just like take the art scroll and translate. You have to mamish have it kar. You know, Rabbi Schnidman is the fourth grade Rebbe. He's Torah Semes. We hired him a couple years ago. He's a very big Talmud Chacham. And it mamish shows. I'm not singling him out as opposed to others, but even as a first year, a second year Rebbe, you see his, like, he's fluent in every one of the farshim, and I think the kids are intrigued by that, you know, by the breadth of it. So, like, an answer to this question, I think for the kids who aren't getting turned on from the Gemara, I think you're right. The Rebbe really should be prepared, and I guess really there is a need for it, but I think ultimately if a person gets turned on by the learning, that's the Masorah. The kids get turned on for learning. I just don't know if they'll just get it just from doing viewpoints. What's the name of that?
Headlines.
It's a good book.
I know this might be a shkafa, but didn't the Rashiva want people knowing how to do that and opening up a shalom and Shuba Sefer and being able to?
Not at 14, though.
Who, the kids? I mean, the Rebbeim said maybe they should be prepared to know how to.
Yeah, if the Rebbe is prepared, he should. You'd be surprised. The Rebbeim work very, very hard just to prepare the Gemara.
I know that. I mean, it's just.
What's your question?
I mean, like, I know they work very hard for the Gemara and everything, but if it's, they're just saying halachos and it's not working out, then why continue?
If they're saying halachos and it's not working out?
Yeah, it's like, they read the Mishnah Berurah and get a test once in a while.
That's not good.
Well, you know, Now that you're on the other side of the fence, you're out of high school, you're in a position to be able to look back and say some of the ways that it was taught may not have been the best way. I think you're ready to be principal.
Also, I mean, at least you can change it. In the 11th grade, they only start slurs and Shibaru. In Rebbe Becker's class, last year, they tried to teach us in Shibaru how to read it. At least, that's what you should do in 9th grade.
Rabbi Dovitz, I'm pretty sure, learned Mishnah Berurah inside when he was teaching Mishnah Berurah.
I mean, everyone, when I was in ninth grade, you didn't have to bring Mishnah Berurah. So everyone would sit in class and just stare at each other. And until 11th grade, in 10th grade, because we learned the Hilchot Shabbos Muktzah, so we just had to write down and worksheet once in a while. 11th grade is when Rabbi Becker said, no one knows how to learn Mishnah Berurah, so now everyone is going to be...
I have all my Mishnah Berurahs from high school here, and I Kemat went through, not Chelek Dalet, but Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Hei, Vav. We Kemat went through 5 Chelekim of Mishnah Berurah when I was in high school. And there's a big machlokas internally in our school. When I taught Mishnah Berurah, Rabbi Grunblatt told me it's machlokas how to teach Mishnah Berurah. Rabbi Grunblatt holds that the ikar is they should know halacha, because they're high school kids. Let them know the halacha. The skills of learning, the reading, they're getting that from Gemara and Bikias. They're getting that from Gemara. So at least halacha, don't make them crazy all day with reading and reading and reading. Let them know halacha. Let them at least know halacha. And you can't concentrate on everything, right? Chait held that they have to learn how to learn Mishnah Berurah. So Ryan Grunblatt went in. Of course, Ryan Grunblatt knows Kalat Torah Kula. He knows Kalat Torah Kula. He knew Kalat Torah Kula 25 years ago, too. So he went in there, and everybody went, and they stared at each other's faces, and they heard all the halachas. And I don't know if they remember it or not, but Ryan Grunblatt was just, powerful. He did the halacha. Rabbi Chait, you're saying that they just stare at each other's faces, like if they're learning the Mishnah Berurah inside, you're suggesting that if they would do the Mishnah Berurah inside, that would have been unbelievable, and anyone would be steiging and learning. But if anything, it was the opposite effect. The ones who were learning the halachas, straight up halachas, the Rebbe, made it was more exciting, and it was, Tamsis and Mishnah Berurah, you can learn Mishnah Berurah. I'm not saying anything disrespectful. I'm not intending to say anything disrespectful on Mishnah Berurah, but you could learn through a Mishnah Berurah and not know the halacha after you finished the siman with all the sivkatans, mechaber, amah, all the sivkatans with the biralachas, and then, now what? And I remember learning, I'm going to stop in a few minutes, but I remember learning Chelek Shlishi was doing, I think Bishul, I was doing Rishon Gimel or Shin Yud Ches, I don't remember what. And I've told this story also, I'm sorry if it's repeated for you. And I remember with my Chavrusa, I didn't know what was going on. I went over to a couple of Kola guys who were learning in Beis Manish. It happened to be the Kola guy was Rabbi Turk from Brooklyn, who was not known yet by the word rabbi. Or the word Tzvi, or the name Tzvi, okay? And I walked over to him, I said, what is the Mishnah Berurah saying over here? He was much older than me. So he said, what he's saying is this and this. So I said, why do you say so? I said it a little disrespectfully. Why do you say so? How am I supposed to figure that out? So Rabbi Turk is not one to mess with. You don't mess with Rabbi Turk, because he took that as an affront to the, what I said was affront to the Mishnah Berurah. So he was, I didn't know this, but at the moment he had taken upon himself to reduce me to what I was worth. And he said, how many times have you learned this Mishnah Berurah? So I said, maybe how many times? I'm doing it for the first time. I was a first year based manager guy. I'm doing it for the first time. He says, I did this, I learned this Mishnah Berurah over 100 times. Get out of here, you nut. Just, get out of here. He's threw me away. So learning Mishabur inside for a high school boy, you want to learn how to learn Mishabur, but you don't know what to trade off, because the skills of learning Mishabur, it's the same skill as learning Gemara, basically. I know there's a style of Mishabur, but the skill is the same. So some people hold off on the skill and let the high school get at least know some halacha. Does he have to be an Am Haaretz for 4 years in high school and not know anything until he gets to Beis Medrash? It's a busha.
Huh? We basically finished the
Mishra. I did, because I went to a high school in Kamenetz, and there was a different Ashkafa. I didn't say I knew Halacha. I said I went through all the Mishra Brewers. I also see that I went through, I'm learning Megillah this year, you know, because the yeshiva's making a CMI. I got to be there. I want to just, you know, eat. I'm not going to eat without learning it. So I'm learning Megillah also. And I'm using my Megillah from high school, my Masechta Megillah from high school, and I see I once upon a time made a C in my Masechta Megillah. I didn't remember that I made a C in Masechta Megillah. So, yeah, that was a derech. We do a lot of reading. You hear places do that. I was one of those places that did a lot of reading. And they did 30, 40 blot, you know. And I can't say it was... I should have been a bigger, more advanced learner when I finished high school than I was. My reading was excellent, but the Havana, the ability to think through, training to think through and harva on something, I lost out on. Because I did so much reading, there was less emphasis on getting the pshat. And the kashas were like, okay, so it's a kasha. Every kasha was okay, so it's a kasha. So okay, after a while, you do that enough times, okay, that was a kasha. Like it weren't for me. Like so, like where it makes no sense. And I that's why when I came into the Beis Medrash, it takes a long time to get past that. So many things don't make any sense. So you just let it go.